Chapter 7. The distribution of tax burdens in Nebraska for the state personal income, sales, excise, and property taxes. By Sally Wallace Moore. Introduction. In this chapter I develop a comprehensive measure of the tax burden in the state of Nebraska for the state's major taxes, property, personal income, general sales, and selective sales and excise taxes on alcohol, cigarettes, and motor vehicles fuels. These taxes constitute almost 60% of the state and local tax revenues in Nebraska and have a significant impact on Nebraska taxpayers. As a percent of state and local tax revenue, the property tax comprised 29%, the personal income 12%, general sales 13%, and motor fuel 4% in 1985. This analysis estimates aggregate tax burdens using data from the 1984 Consumer Expenditure Survey and the IRS Individual Tax Model file. I am most interested in the distribution of the tax burden by population decile, and these samples provide us with good estimates of the state's income and expenditure distributions. In this chapter, I estimate the burden by population decile based on comprehensive income. I also estimate the tax burdens associated with the institution of a 4% sales tax on food, selected services, and gasoline. Section 1 outlines the methodology used in this analysis. The methodology is based on a number of previous tax studies, which are referred to in this section. Section 2 provides a summary of the data used for the burden estimates. Sections 3 reports the estimates of the distribution of tax burdens for the personal income tax, general sales, excise, and property taxes. The section outlines the assumptions made to estimate the tax burdens and uses tables to show the distribution of the effective tax rates. Section 4 reports the distribution of effective tax rates from a 4% sales tax on food, selected services, and motor vehicles fuel. The final section summarizes the findings and the alternatives available to the state. A set of appendices provide further information regarding methodology and the use and manipulation of the data. Methodology. The methods used to calculate the tax burdens for each type of tax are straightforward. Once I have decided which taxes to investigate based upon data availability and the importance of the tax as a revenue source, I do three things. First, I determine the incidence or shifting of the tax. Incidence refers to who legally pays a tax, and it also considers the possibility that the tax shifted forward in the form of higher prices of goods or backward in the form of lower wages. I utilize a number of well-known studies to determine the incidence assumptions for each tax. Secondly, I estimate the amount of the tax that is exported. I use the minimum requirements approach to estimate the percent of output that is exported from the state. Basically, this approach estimates exports by comparing levels of production for states of similar size. I use estimates made by Moody and Morgan Six to estimate the amount of tax exportation due to the economic activity of tourists. Finally, I allocate the tax revenue reported by the Department of Revenue based upon the incidence assumptions made. In many cases, the allocation of the tax is based upon consumption expenditures. I use the Consumer Expenditure Survey to estimate the expenditures by income group. Table 7.1 summarizes the incidence and allocation assumptions used for all of the taxes included in this chapter. Detailed information regarding the incidence assumptions for each tax is provided in Section 3. Once I estimate how much of the tax is paid by each income group, I calculate the tax burdens. Tax burden or effective tax rate is defined as the ratio of taxes paid to comprehensive income. I use the following definition of comprehensive income based on annual measures of income, wage and salary income, interest and dividend income, rental income, farm income, loss, business income, loss, pensions, and annuities. Since comprehensive income is the measure of ability to pay, it should include all family income, including imputed rent and realized and unrealized appreciation of assets. Tax burdens are calculated by adding total taxes paid by income group and dividing by total income for each group. I could not calculate tax burdens by individual observations due to the sampling procedure used in the Consumer Expenditure Survey. Since burdens are measured for each income group, I cannot measure horizontal equity because there is no variation within income groups. Measuring income. A more complete measure of income is permanent income, which refers to the income level that families expect to have over their lifetime. If families consume based on permanent income, they will tend to maintain a given level of consumption from year to year, although their annual income fluctuates. Therefore, the consumption-to-income ratio may vary from year to year. This is especially true for young consumers who expect a larger lifetime or permanent income than their present income, and therefore consume by borrowing on future income. Also, farmers and business owners with one or two bad years, loss of profits, will consume according to their expected lifetime income. They too will tend to borrow to maintain consumption in these bad years. As people grow older, they also typically have a larger consumption to annual income ratio, since they spend out of savings. I do not have data to measure permanent income for all individuals. To do so requires panel data, survey data on individuals over a number of years, from which a measure of permanent income could be derived. I am forced to use annual income as a measure of ability to pay, which results in misleading burden calculations. For the lowest income group, this group includes young families, older families, and families with farm and business income losses due to the spending behavior described above. The tax burdens for the lowest income group are typically extremely high when tax burdens are based on annual income. These high tax burdens do not accurately reflect the real tax burden for the people in the lowest income group, as many families in this group continue their permanent level of consumption and therefore pay high taxes, although their income is temporarily low. Other well-known studies encounter the same misleading estimate of the tax burden in the lowest income group and therefore ignore the lowest income group. For example, Petchman, 1985, and Petchman and Ochner, 1974, report the distribution of the tax burden without the lowest income earners. Therefore, while burdens are reported for this first decile, I direct the reader's attention to the distribution of the tax burdens for the second through tenth deciles. Why not urban and rural tax burdens? Although a breakdown of consumer groups by region or other factors is helpful in analyzing the distribution of the tax burden, it is not possible with existing data. For the sales tax, the CES data is categorized by region of the country so that I cannot estimate expenditures by urban-rural location. The sales tax data that is collected by the Department of Revenue is reported by location of retail merchant, not by resident location. Thus, if I buy clothing in Douglas County but live in Dodge County, the sales tax that I pay is reported by Douglas County. I cannot accurately allocate the sales tax paid by a county to the residents of that county to estimate the amount of tax paid by urban versus rural residents. Even the sales tax revenue reported for motor vehicle sales does not allow us to estimate urban-rural expenditure patterns. Although sales tax revenues from motor vehicle sales are reported by county of residence, I have no strong evidence to suggest that the pattern of motor vehicle expenditures is related to the pattern of any other consumer expenditure. It is therefore misleading to allocate taxes to urban-rural consumers based on this limited information. I also do not have an accurate picture of rural versus urban families for the personal income tax. Data could not be obtained on the distribution of family income, family size, and composition of income for urban versus rural families in Nebraska. This information is crucial in determining taxes paid and income levels, and therefore tax burdens. Data. This study uses the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Expenditure Survey, CES, 1984, interview and IRE surveys, and the IRS 1984 individual tax model file. The CES interview survey is a panel data set which contains demographic information for families in the United States and detailed information on expenses and income. The IRE component contains demographic and income information and detailed information on day-to-day types of expenditures. For instance, the interview survey has expenditure information on motor vehicles and appliances, while the dairy survey has information on grocery expenditures and car repairs. The observations in the CES dataset are coded by geographic region. Nebraska is part of the Midwest designation. Once the weights are applied to the sample observations, the sample represents the total Midwest population. I therefore used observations from the Midwest as an approximation for Nebraska consumers. As suggested by the BLS, I only included observations which fully reported income, since the income measure is an integral part of the tax burden estimate. More detailed information regarding the CES is available from the U.S. Department of Labor, Bureau of the Census and Consumer Expenditure Survey, Interview Survey 1984, and Consumer Expenditure Survey, Diary Survey 1982-1983. The IRS 1984 tax model file consists of 74,556 taxpayer returns designed to represent the total U.S. tax filing population. A state identification code is included for all tax returns, with an adjusted gross income less than $200,000. As explained in Wallace Moore and Riddle, these data were used to construct a sample that is representative of the Nebraska tax-paying population. These data were used to calculate the distribution of the state personal income tax burden. State personal income tax. I assume that the state personal income tax is borne by income earners and is not shifted to other economic agents. I utilize a sample derived from the IRS individual tax model file to determine the amount of the state personal income tax paid for 1987 and 1991 under the state tax reform of 1986. The calculation of tax burdens by income group for several other taxes necessitates a consistent definition of income for all taxes. Because of this consistency, the definition of income used in this chapter differs slightly from the definition of income used in Chapter 4. Thus, the personal income tax burdens are somewhat different between Chapter 4 and those reported here, although the distribution of the burden is about the same in both cases. Table 7-2 reports the distribution of the burden of the state personal income tax. In both 1987 and 1991, the tax is progressive. The effective tax rate, or tax burden, increases as income increases. Concentrating on the 2nd through 10th deciles, the burden ranges from 0.2% to 3.34% of income in 1987 and 0.19% to 3.45% of income in 1991. The largest change in the effective rate comes between the 2nd and 3rd decile, reflecting the phase-out of the zero bracket amount and personal exemptions. In 1991, the effective tax rates increased due to the additional revenue generated. General sales tax and excise taxes. General sales. Most portions of the general sales and excise tax are assumed to be passed forward to consumers of final products. This is appropriate since the state sales tax rate in neighboring states is similar to that in Nebraska, so none of the neighboring states has an edge on any other in terms of lower prices. If one state did not have a sales tax, the prices of goods in that state would be lower than in other states where the tax is passed forward. If consumers were willing to travel to the lower taxed state to buy goods, the retailers in the higher taxed states would have to absorb the tax or lose their business to retailers in the lower taxed state. If all states have a similar tax rate, the tax can be shifted forward to consumers without a loss of business, since consumers have to travel very far to find a low or no tax state. Since Nebraska's neighboring states have similar rates, the tax will be paid by consumers. Also, locally produced goods face little or no competition, and therefore the tax can be shifted to the consumer. Since most goods that are taxed are fairly inexpensive, it is not worthwhile for the consumer to purchase goods outside of the state. Therefore, most retailers face little competition and can shift the sales tax forward. The incidence of the sales tax on agricultural products, specifically livestock and crops, is treated differently from the general sales tax on other goods. Since the prices for these goods are set in a highly competitive national market, Any shifting of the tax through increased prices would result in a loss of demand for the products. The tax is therefore assumed to be borne by farmers and is allocated based on the distribution of permanent farm income. There is also an issue of allocating sales taxes on intermediate products to consumers. I utilize the Nebraska input-output table to allocate sales taxes on intermediate and final demand for each of the 46 industries listed in the input-output table. Appendix 7A contains the actual methodology used. Basically, by using the input-output table, I am able to trace a sales tax on intermediate commodities through to the final product. For instance, some of the sales tax revenue reported by the agricultural chemical industry is paid by households directly when they purchase agricultural chemicals from the manufacturer in the form of gardening supplies, etc. However, some of the same tax is paid by the livestock industry when they make agricultural chemical purchases to produce livestock. The livestock industry therefore incurs some of the sales tax burden, since I assume that the sales tax shifted forward. This industry may then pass the burden forward to consumers in the form of higher prices for their output, or they may absorb the tax in the form of decreased profits. Using the input-output table, I can estimate the sales tax per unit of final demand by households, taking into account the interactions between industries. In addition to the complexity introduced by taxation of intermediate products, some of the sales and excise taxes are exported by tourist payment of the taxes and by exportation of output that has incorporated into its price the taxes that were paid on its intermediate components. Since tourists take home part of the tax, I do not want to allocate that portion of the tax to Nebraska residents. I estimate the amount exported by tourists traveling in the state to be 3%. With the exception of sales tax revenue from lodging and agricultural products, 3% of each sales tax is allocated to out-of-state tourists. Based on data from the U.S. Travel Center, I calculate that 23% of lodging sales are made by out-of-state visitors, and therefore allocate this percentage to tourists based on lodging expenses. As is shown and detailed in Table 7A1, the range of exported output is between 0 and 96% of total output. The most exporting is estimated to be done by the grain products industry. Column 3 of Table 7-3 shows that, overall, the general sales tax is regressive. As income increases, a smaller percentage of income is paid in sales taxes. This result is similar to the findings in most studies, including Petchman and Ochner, 1974, and Wisconsin, 1979. The burden ranges from 3.89% in the second decile to 1.19% of income in the highest income decile. The largest amount of regressivity occurs between the second and fifth deciles, with only mild regressivity in the top five income deciles. Specific sales and excise taxes. In this section, I estimated the tax burdens of the per unit taxes on alcoholic beverages, cigarettes, and motor vehicles fuel. Table 7-3 presents the distribution of the selective taxes on alcohol, cigarettes, and motor vehicle fuels. Tax on alcoholic beverages. The tax per gallon charged on alcoholic beverages is assumed to be passed forward to consumers. With the exception of the exportation of 3% of the tax to tourists, all of the tax revenue was allocated to consumers of alcoholic beverages at home and at restaurants. Column 5 of Table 7-3 shows that under this set of assumptions, the tax is regressive, and it ranges from 0.21% in the second income decile to 0.08% of income in the 10th income decile. However, the difference in the burden between the second and third deciles is large compared to the burden in the remaining groups, which suggests the poorer households spend a much larger percent of income on alcohol consumption. Due to the narrow scope of the tax, it imposes less of a burden on families than the general sales tax. Tax on cigarettes. The per unit tax on cigarettes is also assumed to be passed forward to consumers of cigarettes, with the exception of the 3% exportation to tourists. The tax is also basically regressive, with a slight increase in the tax burden for the highest income decile. The range of the cigarette tax is much wider than that for alcohol, from 1.06% in the second decile to 0.08% of income in the 10th decile. Cigarette and alcohol taxes are generally referred to as sin taxes. That is, they are taxes on non-necessary, potentially harmful consumption. The regressivity of such a tax may therefore be less important to policymakers than taxes on essential consumption. Tax on motor vehicle fuels. The tax on motor vehicles' fuel is assumed to be passed forward due to a lack of competition and is distributed based on consumption by households, farmers, and business owners. I first estimate expenditures on gasoline by households, farmers, and business owners from the Consumer Expenditure Survey. As discussed above, half of the consumption by business owners and farmers was assumed to be for personal use, and that portion of the tax is distributed to business owners and farmers based on their consumption. Business owners are assumed to pass the remaining portion of the tax forward. This burden is distributed to all consumers based on total consumption expenditures. For consumption by farmers, it is assumed that half of the fuel is purchased for personal use. Farmers are assumed to bear the burden of the tax associated with fuel for business and personal use. Under these assumptions, the tax is regressive, as is seen from Column 6 of Table 7-3. The tax rate ranges from 1.77% in the second income decile to 0.49% in the 10th income decile. Property taxes. Property tax revenues of $950,426,265 were broken into five groups: residential, commercial, farm, personal property, and utilities based on data from the state and the census. Homestead tax credits of $26,531,000 are also allocated to homeowners, as described below. In this section, I discuss the distribution of the tax burden from residential, commercial, farm, and personal property. Personal property tax. Since personal property value is mostly due to the value of motor vehicles, I use data on the number of motor vehicles purchased by households to estimate the percent of personal property value from households versus business. I estimate that 70% of the value of personal property is from households, and 30% is from business. The tax allocated to business is subsequently broken down into the tax on incorporated and unincorporated businesses. Using data from the City-County Data Book and the Nebraska Statistical Handbook, I estimate that 40% of firms are incorporated and 60% are unincorporated. Personal property value was estimated by income group using the relationship between income and assessed value of personal property derived from census data. The tax paid by households is assumed to be borne by those same households, or no shifting of the tax occurs. The tax paid by business is assumed to be borne partly by business owners, and part of the tax is assumed to be passed forward to consumers through higher prices. The portion that is borne by business owners is allocated to households based on business income, and that borne by consumers is allocated based on total consumption expenditures. Table 7-4 shows that the tax is generally regressive, ranging from 1.74% of income in the second income decile to 1.26% of income for the highest income group. Residential property. The residential property tax was divided between owners and renters. The owners of owner-occupied property are assumed to bear the full burden of the tax, while the property tax on rental property is assumed to be shared by owners and renters. The homestead credit is allocated to homeowners aged 65 or older, based on the market value of their home and the guidelines of the program. Column 4 of Table 7-4 shows that this tax is also regressive, but the range of the burden is much larger than it is for personal property, from 9.17% of income in the second decile to 1.99% of income in the 10th decile. The regressivity of the tax most apparent in the second through fifth income deciles, reflecting that the percentage of housing costs to income for low-income earners is substantial. The homestead credit decreases the burden for the first through sixth deciles. The largest impact of the credit is found in the second, third, fourth, and fifth deciles. The credit only slightly decreases the overall burden for the FRRSD DSLs because this group has fewer homeowners. Commercial property. Commercial property tax paid is split between incorporated and unincorporated firms. The 40% allocated to incorporated firms is partially allocated to dividend earners. I assume that 50% of these are in Nebraska and to all consumers based on total consumption. Of the 60% allocated to unincorporated firms, 50% is allocated to business owners based on business income, and 50% is allocated to all consumers based on total consumption. Column 5 of Table 7-4 shows the distribution of the tax on commercial property. The tax imposes less of a burden on all taxpayers than the property tax on residential and personal property. The tax burden ranges from a high of 2.09% in the second income decile to a low of 0.84% in the 10th decile. Except for the second decile, the tax imposes less of a burden on consumers than the property tax on personal or residential property. Property tax on farms. The property tax allocated to farmers is based on an imputed assessed valuation of farms. From column 6 of table 7-4, I see that this tax appears more regressive in terms of the range 12.08 to 0.88% of income than the other property taxes. In particular, the burden in the second income decile is 12.08%, and it falls to 2.27% of income in the third income decile. The burden stays at about 2% until the 10th income decile, where it falls to 0.88% of income. The income received by the agricultural sector is especially variable year by year. Since the tax is allocated based on imputed permanent farm income, that is, consumption expenditure, families reporting farm losses are allocated part of the tax. For a one-year period, the burden on this low-income group is therefore probably overstated, and the burdens in the third through tenth income deciles are more indicative of the regressivity pattern of the tax. Overall tax burden. As a summary, the system of Nebraska state taxes, as examined here, is regressive. This is true for the property, general sales, and excise taxes. The state personal income tax is an exception, as it is a progressive tax over all income groups. Table 7-5 compares the distributions of the tax burdens of each of the major taxes. Figure 7-1 graphically shows the distribution of the tax burdens. The first decile was dropped due to a scale problem. The overall burden is between 32.18% of total income in the second decile to 10.10% of total income in the 10th income decile. The property tax imposes the largest burden on all taxpayers, while the excise tax studied here imposed the smallest burden on taxpayers. The overall tax burden decreases by 50% when moving from the second to third decile. Although this dramatic change is due largely to the property tax burden, the general sales and excise tax burdens also demonstrate large percentage changes in the tax burden between the second and third deciles. Due to the interaction of the progressivity of the income tax and regressivity of all other taxes, the overall tax burden is similar for the seventh through tenth deciles. Therefore, the overall system is not as regressive as any of the individual tax studied. Alternative tax schemes. Policymakers often are confronted with expanding tax bases to raise more revenue. Typical base expansion involves extending the general sales tax to food, gasoline, and services. Because of these proposals, I use data from the Consumer Expenditure Survey and estimate the distribution of the tax burden on these commodities. Sales tax on food. As shown in Table 7-6, the sales tax on food is regressive, as expected. In most income groups, there is also a pattern of increased tax burden as family size increases. See Table 7-6. We expect that as family size increases, holding income constant, so too do food expenditures. As family size increases, the regressivity of the tax also increases. For families with one person, the tax burden varies from a high of 0.70% of income in the second income group to 0.05% of income in the highest income group. For a family size of four, the spread is 2.51 to 0.29% of income. the burden pattern for the first income group and the third income group, with a family size of 7 in Table 7-6, is irregular, possibly due to families growing their own food. This leads to smaller than normal burdens, farm or business losses, leading to a larger consumption to income ratio, or a sampling problem since the number of observations for large family sizes is small. A sales tax on food would generally be introduced along with an income tax credit for low-income families to offset the regressivity of the food sales tax. Table 7-7 compares the average effective state personal income tax rates by income group and the food sales tax burden. The evidence in this table suggests that in the first and second income groups, tax credits exceed personal income tax payments, and the state would have to reimburse households for the sales tax paid. Table 7-8 shows the amount of tax paid by income group and family size under the 4% food sales tax. This table may serve as a basis for developing a system of credits. It gives an estimate of the amount of tax paid. Depending upon the equity criteria determined by the state, a percent of the tax paid could be returned as a tax credit for any or all income groups. An income tax credit scheme to compensate for the regressivity of the sales tax requires several things to be put into place. Policymakers need to estimate the size of the tax credit by family size and by income. Second, the size of the credit should be indexed with food prices, and the consumption data used to estimate the tax credit should be updated periodically to update the food consumption patterns. Third, policymakers must be willing to pay households that have allowed negative income tax credits. Fourth, families eligible for the credit will have to file state income tax returns, and compliance would have to be very high to avoid regressivity in sales tax on food. 4% tax on motor vehicle fuels. The tax on motor vehicle fuels is regressive, as is shown by Table 7-9. The revenues realized from a 4% sales tax on motor vehicle fuels are approximately $22 million based on our CES sample. The burden of a tax on motor vehicle fuels is not as high as one on food, and it ranges from a high of 0.42% of income for the second income decile to a low of 0.11% of income for the 10th decile. 4% sales tax on selected services. The sales tax on new services would yield approximately $33 million in revenues, as shown by Table 7-10. These services are basically all but medical and business services, but include such services as cable services, personal services, and veterinarian services. The distribution of the tax burden is regressive in the second decile through fifth decile. In the last five income deciles, the burden changes very little and actually increases between the 9th and 10th deciles. It therefore has a roughly proportional tax burden in these top five income deciles, in contrast to sales taxes on food or motor vehicle fuels for the higher income earners. Conclusions. The overall burden of the general sales, property, state personal income, cigarette, motor vehicle fuels, and alcohol taxes is regressive in Nebraska. The state personal income tax is the only tax that is progressive. The property tax burdens are the highest of any single tax studied here. The alternatives examined in this chapter include a 4% sales tax on food, selective services, and motor vehicle fuels. As shown in Figure 7-2, of these new taxes, the tax on motor vehicle fuels imposes the smallest increase in tax burdens. The sales tax on food increases tax burdens most for households in the second through ninth decile. The food sales tax would increase revenues the most, but concerns about equity may have to be addressed through a credit system. These alternatives must be examined by the state, and they must decide on the equity-revenue trade-off that they will accept. For a complete guide to the methodology and formulas used in this chapter, please see Appendix 7A and 7B.